How the amount came to is overspending of program 2 and program 3 in different years, but not the overspending of the vote as such. So the whole department didn't overspend. So we are just waiting for a decision taken, and then that will be implemented. It can be either with funds approved or not approved, and then we have to make it good in our own funds. Then in terms of the irregular expenditure of 184,000, we are there awaiting a condemnation. We didn't receive any report back as yet. We can just make a follow-up and to hear from the DPSA what was the decision on that specific matter. Then the increase in the cost or expenditure of computers, specifically the CETA increase.
Condemnation for more than 184,000. Am I to understand that yours goes to the DPSA for condemnation?
Thank you, Chairperson. This case was referred to Treasury. But Treasury said it's because it has to do with compensation of employees, and they advised us to hand this over to the DPSA. That was in terms of irregular expenditure.
No, I'm just trying to understand, because when we did irregular expenditure with SIPS, we were told that it gets condoned by the audit committee. The BID committee, in fact, the audit committee, whatever they call it, BID adjudication committee, and then signed off by the accounting officer once the BID adjudicating committee has done so. So you're saying it's got to do with compensation of how many employees?
Thank you, Chair. It has to do with two employees. And that's why, because it's compensation, it cannot be done by the BID committee. Okay. Then the question in terms of the increase of expenditure on computers, specifically the high CETA increase, what happened there was in 2019, all departments received a credit note from CETA, where it was acknowledged that they have indeed overcharged departments. So in 19, the invoices were first set off against this credit note. So the payment that we did in 2019 is actually then not a true reflection of what is actually paid. It was because of the huge credit that ICD received. The expenditure therefore incurred in 2010-11 is a more realistic expenditure. It has to do with the services of the transversal systems, also some system development there, and licenses. Specifically related to CETA. Then on the consultants, the contractors in total more than 2 million. Now this has to do basically with consultants with in regard to what is paid, and then these consultants is the audit committee members. Our contribution for the pillar, and then translations and transcription services. Also, if we have reorganizing sessions and we need some specific inputs there, then also on the contractors, it is mostly to do with the transport and then employee wellness and then the machinery and equipment maintenance of that, specifically the security equipment. That is what this has had to do with that, and that's why there was such a huge amount. The legal cost, the question was why did it increase so, and why did we basically overspend the amount? Now, the legal cost specifically is obtaining of legal opinions in terms of disputes and settlement by employees. It's that it's internal. And then we receive that, and all the accounts are coming through the Department of Justice, and then we settle it. Then there was also a question regarding why we did not receive any funds for 482 computers that we disposed. computers that were still workable in the sense that on a small scale, it was donated to schools and charities. Those that we did disposed of physically were didn't have any monetary value, and it had to be then crushed and totally disposed of. So if there were anything that had monetary value, we would have received. Then there was a question on the contingent liabilities, the possible claims, also that it was understated, as mentioned in the IG report. Now, what happened there, it is the ICD decided to take a very prudent approach. It is made up of 8 cases. Now, one case was a court settlement of 17,922, but I think that was not a problem as such because it was just one case. Then previous year case that has not been finalized was against Limpopo investigator, 125,000. Then there was also a case in Northwest of 300,000, in Eastern Cape of 100,000, in Gauteng of 76,000. Then there was a huge case that we have now, and that is the reason why it jumped from 2 million to the high amount of over 8 million, 9 million. There was a dispute in the previous building that National Office occupied. Whilst the process was going on to find a suitable building, the corporate services component stayed into that building on the old lease agreement, and the landlord then basically sued Public Works, actually the Minister of Public Works and then the Minister of Police and ICD. Our view is that we are only the tenants and Public Works are actually the persons dealing with this, but we took this very prudently and therefore we made provision should the court take a decision against the department.
Follow up. Even if they can't give it to us now, but I mean, these cases against investigators, I think we need more detail on why investigators end up in court, and why they are sued, why is there this liability. As much as we want to know why SAPS cost the taxpayer money in terms of their liabilities, we need to know the same in terms of the ICD. I mean, it's not good enough to say one investigator here, one investigator there. What is the problem?
Just, I'm afraid I missed the lady's name. I haven't met this lady before. Is this our new chief financial officer person?
It's our budget controller, Ms. Engelbert.
Budget controller. Okay, budget.
Thank you, chairperson. If we are allowed, we will come back with specific reasons in writing for these cases against the department where we can provide more information. If you will allow us that, then we can give it to you. And then there was further a question on the rollover by the chairperson of the 2.9 and acknowledging that Treasury did approve 1.4 million. And the question was, how is this going to be impact on the department? If Treasury didn't approve that, then we would have had to reprioritize because this were expenditure or orders were placed but the invoices were not received. The fact that they at least met us halfway means a lot of us, it's a positive impact on ICD. It means that we then will just need to reprioritize for the rest of the funds. But it was plainly because we could not pay without the invoice being handed. And that, I think, is from my side on the finance one. I will just hand back to the chair after our executive director.
Yeah, chairperson, maybe just...
I hear that, you know, for the department with a budget of ICD, 1.4 million is a lot of money. And surely it, if you're saying it won't have any negative impact, why did you even ask for a rollover then? 2.9, you're getting 1.4. And the treasury is saying you're not able to use your money, I'm cutting it down. And what is the impact of this going forward? I'm really saying, you seem to be saying no, there won't be any negative impact. Is it really possible? Where service is rendered, where you're supposed to pay, it's just that you did not have receipts or whatever, or invoices for you to make payment, but where service is rendered in the first place. And if yes, what then is the effect of now getting 1.4 instead of 2.4? I want to believe that will amount to the service that was rendered. Are you saying the services that were rendered are amounting to 1.4 and not 2.9 million?
Thank you, Chair. There are various services that made up our initial request, but Treasury were only concentrating on the large amounts, and the specific one is with licenses, and that is a three-year contract, or three-year for licenses being for 3 years. So the fact that we got now the 1.4 makes it now easier for us. The rest we have to still find in our budget, current budget, to pay for the actual services rendered. Thank you.
Looking at your performance from the beginning of the year up to September, which I think according to this adjusted appropriation report, you seem not to be performing up to scratch. How are you going to correct this going forward? Because it would seem like you're doing one and the same thing. You might end up with yet another rollover cut down again. How are you going to correct it?
Thank you, Chairperson. We fully realize that we are not on par. What we did put into place is monitoring it. We check it on a monthly basis. We discuss it, and the questions are then taken to the program managers. On a quarterly basis, we are calling all the responsibility managers to account for that fact. So, yes, we do acknowledge and agree with you that it is concerning, but we are really trying our best to get it down and also get on par like our counterparts in the other departments.
I just want to maybe add one issue regarding contractors. One item that is also under contractors is relocation. So apart from head office, also other provincial offices that may be moved, that item is also there. John, then to come to the issues the Honourable Chairperson raised just before we broke for tea, the issues raised by the AG. Maybe just to respond to that, Chairperson, the one issue also relates to the issue of the contingent liability that the AG raises. And that also deals with the issue of the correction of the financial statements. Now, that effectively deals with the fact that there wasn't a full inclusion of the interest with regard to that amount. So from our side, we have done the following. The contingent liability inputs into the financial statement received from legal services will in future be signed off by the Director Legal Services as being complete and accurate, and the status of the contingent liability will be reported to finance by Legal Services on a quarterly basis, and the interim financials will then contain an accurate reflection of the contingent liability at that date. So that is our action plan to ensure that it doesn't occur again. Then in terms of the question with relation to the reliability of performance information. And that's a big concern for us, to ensure that all our source documents are correct. And the monitoring and evaluation unit, or not unit, but committee, is busy in the provinces dealing with audit of all those processes, but just to give an indication to the committee that we are currently engaging on. A daily update of the provincial case registers, the verification of the information and data integrity by supervisors, then quite importantly the signing of certificates, because that was maybe one issue that the AG had picked up, that from the process at the case analyst or monitor there must be a signing off of that information personal signing off to ensure that there is accountability. Then the signing off of those certificates also ensure that the validity of the correctness and accuracy of the performance information is advanced, and that there is a correlation between the investigation case files and the performance information submitted. Now, with the new system that has been implemented, the FlowCentric system also provides us with the necessary tool to verify the accuracy of the performance and the meeting of targets against the predetermined objectives by drawing reports from the database system. So that's the additional tool, apart from the going to a provincial office, doing a manual count, and then make an analysis of that. And then again, the review and audit of the physical count by the M&E committee. And then also those monthly reports are discussed at the senior management meetings on a monthly basis. So from our side, we're addressing that in terms of that. Then cases were signed off as complete without the case investigation report, and numerous cases were approved for completion by officials without proper written delegation. And in one or two provinces where it happened, we have, addressed it. Letters of delegation must be in that files, and the provincial head must take responsibility for that. Now, the provincial head must, before approving the completion or closure of the files, ensure that there's full compliance with the SOPs, the Standing Operating Procedures. So that is vital. And the quality control form in the file is, in effect, is our tool to ensure that all the activities have been checked and completed. And the new FlowCentric system will also enable the department to determine whether all those completed cases contain that case investigative report. And the M&E committee has already done 3 provinces, I think, in this financial year, and also the internal audit unit. And although we're still awaiting the approval of our structure, the appointment of additional internal audit staff will also assist. So we've got, apart from the M&E committee, the internal audit committee is also verifying whether this has been implemented. And then there's an additional provision now in the SOP requiring provincial heads to conduct monthly inspections of the files and then submit reports to the program manager too. And it's also a warning system to ensure that we can be notified that there are shortcomings in the system, and we've already referred to the internal audit unit. Then in terms of the other issues raised by the chairperson, we spoke about the 30 days. Maybe then in terms of the issue also raised by the AG regarding the verification of qualifications and other claims relevant to the employment position of newly appointed staff. Now, all new appointed staff is now its qualifications is now verified by the South African Qualifications Authority, SAQA, as per the directive from the DPSA on 1 July 2011. And then the service level agreement with Credit Inform is to conduct a criminal record, citizen verification, and financial or asset record check of all financial staff to deal with that issue specifically raised by the AG. Then the issue of internal control leadership, the comprehensive system of reporting performance information. We believe this is a very important issue because if the National Treasury gives green light in future, there will be, the AG will report on this, and in terms of qualification or disclaimer, and we must get it right. So there is a review and improvement of the SOPs underway, the review and improvement of monthly performance reporting templates, and then also complete utilization of FlowCentric and also the senior management meetings for that. Then the establishment of compliance structures, and that is one thing that is still a concern for us going forward. Remember, we are a national department, but there's no corporate governance unit, and our internal audit unit is also not fully staffed. So what we did is, to address the AG's concerns, is to appoint a compliance officer in December, but that's actually our risk officer, to ensure that we've got somebody in place. Then there's a compliance tool developed that must be completed by all your responsibility managers on a monthly basis to ensure, and they must indicate, are they complying to the various laws and regulations. And then we've, as I earlier indicated to the chairperson, we've requested National Treasury to give us funding next year for a corporate governance unit that we have qualified and experienced officials that can do the M&E as well as the compliance, because, you know, asking people with no qualification with regard to those matters to do it, and that is a risk for any organization. So if we get the money, we'll be able to do that. Then in terms of the one other issue raised by the AG regarding the SMART principles contained in the Framework for Managing Performance Program, the 2010-11 annual report includes an explanation of predetermined quality standards in that the work percentages in the Strat Plan and Annual Performance Plan represent the work rate on which the department performance should be evaluated. The percentage work rate is evaluated against the overall workload to determine whether the department has achieved its predetermined strategic objectives. Then determination of quality standards are currently being reviewed to ensure compliance with SMART criteria for inclusion in the Departmental Annual Performance Plan 2012-13. Just also to indicate to the chairperson that we have yesterday submitted our second draft of the Annual Performance Plan as well as the Strat Plan for 2012-13 to National Treasury and the Presidency for evaluation. So we are in line with the new process. That is in terms, Chairperson, in terms of issues raised by the AG and our response to that. Then I'll ask the other colleagues to deal with the other issues. Mr. Sorkel also to deal with the head office lease matter that was raised. Yeah. And all the other colleagues then on the other issues.
Thank you, Chairperson. Honourable members, with regard to people with a disability, the department has four people with disability. One is the Deputy Director Internal Audit, two are administration clerks, and one is a case analyst. With the regard to the issue of performance, 112 employees in the department received performance rewards. That would average to 9,080 rand per employee. Now, in terms of the performance management system, employees whose performance is above average or perform excellently, they would be entitled to a performance bonuses ranging from 5% to 18%. However, the Departmental Moderating Committee determined that all employees in the department in the period under review receive only 5%. Performance bonus because of the available budget that was there.
I hope now, it excludes the Mpumalanga Direct.
Yes.
I do believe.
Yes, it does exclude Mpumalanga Direct, definitely. The four employees with a disability in the department, only one was evaluated during the period under review. And the other three were not evaluated because they were still under probation. And then with regard to the issue of why the staff are leaving, most of the staff, like the ED has indicated earlier, that they are leaving for greener pastures. As you may be aware, that we had 21 staff members who transferred from ICD to other departments for higher level posts. The reality of our situation is that because of the nature of our department and the fact that we have a very small structure, our employees tend to do more work, and they don't specialize in any specialty. So therefore, it becomes then easier for them to get a job opportunities in other departments. But also the fact that other departments tend to pay higher or pay at a higher level than the ICD does in terms of the positions that you have in the ICD. However, moving forward in terms of EPID, what the department has done, like the exit director indicated, that we've done a job evaluation, and those posts that we regarded as critical posts that we're losing, like your case analysts and your monitors, we then go into have those posts upgraded to from level 5 to level 7 in case of case analysts, and from level 7 to level 8 in case of monitors, just to try to be competitive. Our experience has been that other departments would pitch this position at a higher level than we do.
But maybe we should now be asking for your retention strategy. You know, the previous financial year, that is 2009-10, you had a turnover of 35 members. And
yes.
I think this time around you decided not to give us that round figure, but the percentage, which you are saying it's 14%. But
37.
Roughly, 37.
Yes.
Which is now more.
Yes.
And that is an indication of a real high turnover for a department as small as yourself. And maybe it's important that we actually say what is your retention strategy, a comprehensive thing rather than targeting one thing and then the rest leave, then you again react to in piecemeal approach. You know, I think it's time that we ask for your retention strategy as a department so that you don't lose people like this, because surely it is worrying us with the implementation of the IP Act. This is going to be a serious challenge for yourself. Thank you.
May I just ask a clarity-seeking question? You were saying, the gentleman was saying that all of these staff go to other government departments where they pay higher salaries, etc. Now, in terms of the public service, where does the ICD fall in terms of the public service, in terms of salary scales and grading, etc.? Are they going to other positions on the same grading level, which other departments are paying at a higher, or are they going to positions that at a higher level? I just wanted to understand that, because if they're going to exactly the same grading in another department and that department's paying a high salary, then there's a problem. You're going to continuously lose people. So I think we just need some clarity on that as to around that aspect.
I think, Chairperson, Honourable Members, it has...
Thanks, Chairperson. My follow-up question is on the appointment of disabled people. In your 2010 to 2013 strat plan, you had indicated that by this financial, the previous financial year, you will have achieved the 2%, and you will do that by ensuring that every province has a disabled person. But what I would like to know is, what strategy did you have in place to ensure that each and every province has this disabled person? Because you haven't achieved that, and you had that as your target for the previous financial year. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. I think the real challenge for the ICD is actually the establishment of the ICD. As compared with bigger departments, you find that our establishment is not big enough to allow for a more position. I will give you an example that, for instance, in a province, you'll find that in your program 1, you will have only one or two people doing administration. And those people will be covering all areas that has to do with corporate services. And in terms of our establishment, those are the only approved posts in that office, for instance. Now, as when you compare that with a bigger department, you'll find that there will be several people in terms of their establishment doing same kind of job but specializing in specific specialties in that environment. For instance, in human resource, you'll find one responsible for recruitment, another one for selection, and so forth. And they will go at different levels. Whereas in ICD, for instance, you'll find that you have an admin clerk at level 4, an admin officer at level 7. And those would be the only levels that are available. Whereas in another department, there will be level 8, there will be level 9, there will be level 10. So because these are approved posts in our structure, even when these people get these offers from other departments, you cannot counter offer if you don't have that post in your structure. So you must have the post in your structure for you to counter offer. If you don't have that, you cannot do that. The best that we can do is to counter offer at a higher notch within that specific post level. And that is the only maneuvering that we have. And also in terms of our retention, we are constrained by these limitations. So it has a lot more to do with our establishment than any other thing. With regard to disability, currently we have one disabled person that has been appointed in the Free State province. It's true that other provinces have not yet appointed. Disabled persons in two provinces that have already been appointed. Other provinces have not yet been appointed. However, our strategy has always been that we must engage with organizations dealing with people with disability to enable us to recruit people with disability. Unfortunately, we've not been successful in that regard. I know that strikes have been made to send out adverts to this organization to try and get people to apply for these positions. However, we've not been successful in that regard. With regard to the issue of the operating lease, the head office requested a building, and this process took about 2 to 3 years, if my memory serves me well. And the public works then engaged in getting a building for head office. However, what happened is that the initial building that was found by Public Works was not adequate for the number of people at head office or the requirement from our head office. You might know, remember that head office initially had two buildings that they occupied, so they had to get one building that would accommodate all head office staff. Now, because the initial building was not adequate for that purpose, then Public Works came up with the current building that head office is occupying. But because that building is bigger than the one that was originally made available, this resulted in an increase in the lease amount as reflected.
And I want to be clear about this because I've made it clear that what is good for the goose is good for the gander. Public work is an agent. You don't sign what you don't want. Don't want it, you don't sign it. What was the cost compared to the lease cost? I tried to look and I asked Honourable Sherman to look as well. What were you paying for your national office before? What are you paying now?
Honourable Chair, unfortunately, I don't have figures now, but I can bring the figures.
Yeah, I've got a problem with this because previously, during the budget hearings, we asked specifically this very same question. we ask what is the cost of the new building. And I mean, there's people from budget here. You can rule, I mean, if they say they don't have it, they don't have it. But since the budget hearing, up to now, we haven't received those figures. We don't know what we are paying for the office. And there's been reports also that is alarming to us in terms of the fact that it's more than what you've budgeted for, which means, again, it impacts on the operational budget of the ICD, and that it's bigger than what you asked for. So can we get clarity on this issue?
And the issue is, how can you say you don't know the figures? I mean, really, we're talking to the top management, and we're talking about something that probably you're paying every month, and you know that you'll be paying for this period of time. How can you then say you don't know the figures? It's like asking me a question as to how much am I paying for my bond, and I say I don't know. How can I know? It comes from me.
I think, Ms. Engelbrecht, can you maybe just explain to the committee in terms of the budget allocation we currently have, and if we've got the detailed figures, just indicate that to the committee. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't have the current figures with me. This is usually, with the leases, it's usually a program one thing. What we did receive last year, we paid in full. That was, I think, 8 million. So I do not have the figures here with me currently. I'm sorry for that.
Chairperson, I think what we will do, we will give to the committee a breakdown of all appropriate figures, I mean, in terms of our lease budget for this year, next year, and as well, what is the current expenditure per month, as well as the bottom line. We'll do that.
What you are paying for the building you are in and that which you pay, and the services that you're getting where you are compared to what you are getting where you are.
I will also be interested in knowing whether there were any costs that you had to incur to get that building ready to move in. In other words, capital expenditure cost in the building where they are in now, the new building. Because I agree with you. You asked me what I pay for my bond. It's my biggest expense. I can tell you immediately what I pay for my bond. I simply don't understand this issue, especially because it was an issue during the budget hearings as well.
Madam Chair, on the issue of the retention policy, which he has just tried to explain, I must say, Madam Chair, probably they'll write, but I'm not very convinced. Some of the arguments raised are not convincing. To say it's because of the structure. You know, it reminds of that story in the Bible. This person has been lying there for 38 years. When he's asked, do you want to be cured? He gives all sort of excuses. I think, because this is the question which has been addressed, not to now, but can you be able to say what is your retention? Because you can't blame the structure. Structure is going to be there. What are you doing? You see, because there is an exodus. Many good people, some of them from provinces, they stay for a short while and they leave. And I don't believe. I thought today you're going to be saying, especially that you're going to move to ICD, this is what we've got to make sure that now this organization is stable. Because an organization that has got this high turnover, it's not going to be stable. And I'm sorry to the management, you see, that's why I'm saying this, what you said in the opening, that where they're not able to bring the details, they'll be sent. But I think this thing, there are issues which when you come to a committee, surely, you must expect that these questions are going to be asked. This thing that you know will come back, because I think even the police, it's becoming now a norm, you see. There might be questions which really people were not expecting to be asked, where you would say, okay, they'll bring, but for instance, the issue now just you have asked, no, we don't have details, surely. It's not supposed to be like that.
Chair, it's on the same issue here. On page 101 of the annual report, and in fact, if I can just say, you know, any of the information on the annual report here that's in this book. We would, one would expect that the team that's here, and it's quite a big team actually, one would expect that somebody in the team would be able to answer various questions relating to the annual report. If we are asking questions outside of the annual report, then that's understandable. But on page 101, it actually talks about operating leases, and that's your leases for your properties. Now, I think what would be helpful for us, if we were given a breakdown of the 2009-2010 figure of $4 million, and then also given a breakdown of the 2010-2011 figure of $15 million, because it would be interesting for us then to actually see for what properties, what leases, etc. But I am surprised that nobody here can actually tell us. That's what an annual report is about, and that's why entities appear before committees, is to answer questions about annual reports, and one would expect that that information be readily available.
Your Chairperson, I agree with the members. I think I at the beginning also indicated the CFO is not here today, but I mean, granted, we will have that information available, and we'll make sure in future also that we've got the appropriate staff here to ensure that we answer the question.
Chairperson, with regard to...
I don't know what to say, really. Because now what you're actually saying is that you do not know the information that is in your own annual report. You cannot account for every sentence in your annual report. And one would expect that a management at this level, and it is very true, that this question, particularly on leases, not only came out for the first time during the budget hearing, even during the previous annual report, because there were, I think, at some stage, intentions that you will be moving to the new, accommodation and so on. And this question came up, and it came up again this year. And here you are still not able to provide us with answers. And we are now referring you to your own document, and you are still not able to respond to your own document. And 4 million and 15. Please continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. With regard to the issue of the policy reviews, we've indicated that we did not meet the objectives there because of staff constraints in the HR division. The reality is that the HR division is still constrained in the sense that as the department has been growing, there has not been much growth in that area. However, we did indicate that we've implemented an action plan to try and make sure that we meet these objectives in terms of a policy review. I can indicate, in fact, that for the first quarter, for instance, that division has been able to meet those objectives in terms of a policy review. And also with regard to the security, what we've indicated is that the post of the security manager has been vacant, and hence the audits were not done as they should have been. But however, after we've made the appointment, then we strive then to do those audits. And like I've indicated, that in terms of the action plans that we've now implemented, this audit are being done now. And in the first 6 months of this financial year, for instance, all these objectives have been met. I think I've covered all the questions.
I heard you say, sir, that despite the ICD growing, this unit has not grown. Are you correcting that in terms of the implementation of the IPIT? It doesn't help that we have a growing IPED, but we don't have a section that can deal with administration accordingly. So can we get an indication what you're doing to correct that?
Thank you, Chairperson. It's true that in terms of IPED, we've made provision for post in specifically in that division. In terms of the job evaluation that we've alluded to earlier, there is provisions for post for deputy director, labor relations, assistant director, HRD, specifically for that division.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be dealing with the questions raised with regards to Program 2. I think the Executive Director has already dealt with those issues that were flowing from the AG's report, and therefore will not repeat them. Safe to say that there was a question that was raised by the Chairperson specifically with regards to the performance in respect of the first 6 months of the current financial year. And the Chairperson indicated that you have a concern that obviously by now, although this is not the reporting period, but obviously you've seen that we did not meet the targets. I just want to also indicate, Chairperson, in response to that question, that you would recall that earlier in the year we came to present our strategy to reduce the backlog. And one of which was to really pay attention in terms of those matters that were carried over in the past financial year, 2009-2010 financial year, and that is basically what we have done. We have substantially reduced that backlog. So that was the focus that was done. However, I mean, I'm not necessarily saying that we ignored the workload in terms of the current financial year. So that has been going basically in tandem. Yes, but we acknowledge the fact that the performance clearly in the first 6 months has not been good. But you'll see that in terms of the breakdown of the first quarter, which is the first, you know, your April, May, and June, the performance was at about 20% and about 30% respectively in terms of the two classes, which then improved in terms of the following quarter, which is now the from July until the end of September. However, it's still not really good enough because we have not yet met the target. But as I've indicated, Chairperson, there was certainly an improvement, and those improvements came from the fact that we are monitoring not only on a quarterly basis but on a monthly basis in terms of the information, performance information that we receive from the provinces. We provide feedback to the provinces to indicate that your performance in respect of whatever classes is very low. What measures are you going to put in place to ensure that you improve in terms of that performance? So there is that proactive intervention from the program manager, but also from the monitoring and evaluation committee, because it is critically important that we. You know, you cannot just only rely on information that you receive. You also, sometimes you have to go to the provinces to look at compliance in terms of regulatory framework, which is the standard operating procedures, in order to ensure that you address some of the concerns that were raised by the AG in terms of not fully complying with the SOPs. So that is the situation, Chairperson, with regard to the concern that you raised with regard to the first 6 monthly performance information.
Mr. Shabalala, sometimes it will also be important for the portfolio committee to get to understand as to how exactly are you addressing the backlog. Because if you're talking to me, sometimes I shiver if it is sub, because we've not had time to discuss this matter with you at length and go deeper into it. One police station in Bloemfontein is supposed to be Bloemfontein Central. I think it's Parkstown Station, whatever, but it's supposed to be Bloemfontein Central. They had a backlog of 8,000 cases, and they wanted to address that. So per month, they will take 869 cases to court. of those 840-something will be closed undetected and reported to you. It is addressing backlog. 840-something out of 869 closed undetected. Now, it doesn't make sense to us, and then at the end of the year, they've addressed their backlog. However, of that, it's this small number that went to court. And it doesn't talk to conviction. It says it went to court. And we don't know as to how many of these were thrown out of court now, because probably there was no proper investigation. No, I'm just saying that the issues I think we've been raising this matter, the backlog, and we understand how you end up having backlogs. But sometimes I think we'll have to know as to how are you dealing of those numbers and that backlog, what then becomes the end product, so that we actually know. I'm not sure whether you have it here, but that will be important.
Just to follow up to that as well, Mr. Chabalala, I'm also worried because I heard it from yourself, I heard it from the ED, we've heard it even from Program 1. What are your provincial managers doing if you have to send instructions? I mean, these findings of the Auditor General in terms of the documentation, one would think it's the manager's job to make sure that that happens, that supporting documents are there. But it's almost like your provincial managers, whether at the level of the provincial manager itself or at the investigating component, are not doing what they're supposed to be doing. You had to issue new instructions to say, do this, make sure there is authority, a delegation of authority letter, make sure that documents are there. It's an obvious thing, and one starts to wonder what managers are doing in the ICD. And now we also hear about the monitoring and evaluation unit going back there, doing again and checking up on what should have been checked up on by the managers. I'm just worried, Chairperson, it feels to me, you know, it's almost like the cluster command issue here. You know, where you start wondering whether people are doing what they are appointed to do. And to some extent, Mr. Chabalala, it raises the question, where were you in finding the solutions as management? Where were you guys finding these problems? Why was it the Auditor General that needed to find out about them?
What I'd like to know is, in that you've got 8,424 cases, that's the workload nationally, how many investigators are we looking at? I mean, what is the, if one had an opportunity to break this down, what sort of caseload are we talking about per investigator? I mean, are we talking 500 cases, 700 cases? How many, in the SAPs, if someone's got 100 cases, you know, we're all throwing our hands in the air and saying, good grief, how can they ever cope? But it suddenly strikes me that with this number, can you give us an indication of, I mean, how long would it take your current investigative staff to get through this number of cases? I just see the backlog is building up here, and it seems to me that next year maybe we're going to be seeing 10,000, 15,000, although you will have more staff now once you become IPED. So I'd less work. Oh, you're handing complaints over to the secretariat, apparently. So, I'd just like to know. I mean, you've got, I don't know if it's a moot question, because you've only got a couple of months left until such time as you become the IPED. If we're looking at either February or the start of the new financial year, which would make more sense, I think, you've got like 6 months, perhaps. How much of this backlog are you going to be dealing with, and how many investigators have you got looking at 8,424 cases? Thank you.
Chairperson, yes. First, let me assure you that with regards to the cases, if you, as I indicated, that we came to present to you the strategy to reduce backlog, Certainly the idea was not just simply to go into these cases and just get rid of them. We wanted to identify what it is that really caused the backlog and to dedicate teams. And hence you had instances where, I mean, for instance, you had provinces that absolutely did not have any backlog. Northwest did not have any backlog into this current financial year. Northern Cape did not have. Free State only had about 30 of the cases that they carried over into the new financial year. It was the Western Cape, Gauteng, Mpumalanga, and so forth that had the backlog, huge backlogs. And hence we had that intervention which we're talking about in respect of Mpumalanga, which has basically yielded results. Yes, perhaps it was an oversight on my side in terms of having to give you now what then happened in terms of that backlog, in terms of the strategy as I've undertaken. What I will do in terms of that specific aspect, I will certainly send the Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members the breakdown, but you'll see that that has been reduced significantly. And going forward is to ensure that certainly we stay, because of there is no way that we cannot carry over workload into the new financial year. It is inevitable. If you catch, for instance, cases in the last quarter of the financial year, it's unlikely that they will be completed in that particular financial year. So they will be moved over into the next financial year. So basically what I'm trying to say is basically to try and break from the past in terms of not having monitored really how we deal with our workload. But, I mean, the measures that we've now put in place certainly assures us that we are really going down in terms of what we're carrying over. And you will see that what we carried over into 2011-12, it's far lower than what was carried over from the 2009-2010 financial year. So I just wanted to make that undertaking that certainly we are taking this matter seriously. Then the other point, and also I will just also, yes. So basically, in respect of the investigators that we have, I think we have adequate investigators to be able to deal with the number of cases that we have. I mean, at this point in time, as I say, there are other various measures that obviously perhaps we did not, as management, in some cases, really put emphasis on. But certainly, there are measures that we have now put in place to make sure that we address the shortcomings that were pointed out. Honourable Ms. Van Wyk wanted to know why do we have to go down to provinces to ensure that there is compliance with the SOP. I want to indicate that the standard operating procedure basically sets out what exactly is expected in terms of an investigation from the time that the complaint is received, how that complaint is processed. When we say this is completion, what exactly is supposed to be seen in a particular file. So those issues are clear, but I mean, from time to time, you find that there may have been a technical issue, which then had to be corrected in terms of the revision of the SOP. But unfortunately, you then also understand, Honourable Member, that from time to time, you would have, I mean, there has to be some kind of auditing to ensure that there is compliance, and that's why you have this monitoring and evaluation committee that goes down to the province. Yes. Before even the AG came, there were findings that was made by the Monitoring and Evaluation Committee to say that there are problems, the very same issues that were raised. Unfortunately, you know, because of the fact that it is a time-consuming process, you don't go back to the province to check whether those issues have been addressed. But certainly those were raised with those particular provinces. And you know, hoping going forward, we're going to be seeing an improvement in terms of that area, Chairperson. The next question that I would deal with was the issue of natural causes, the deaths that were caused as a result of natural causes. I want to indicate that a lot of these deaths of persons that died as a result of natural causes happened in hospitals, where persons were arrested and they were ill. But at the time that they were critically ill, they were then taken to hospital and under police guard. Hence, then it becomes a death in police custody. But it is basically explained that obviously this is not necessarily caused by either a person being assaulted or whatever the case might be by members of the police. It is clear from the medical record that this person had a history of a particular illness. You raise a concern, Chairperson, that in some cases you've received complaints that people are denied of medical, their medication. There has been those kind of instances. We had followed up those instances where we find them. But it becomes difficult to pinpoint which specific member, for instance, would have refused this person to their medication. So it's one of those dicey situations. However, as I indicated, the majority of these persons that died as a result of natural causes have died under police guard in hospitals.
Mr. Shabalala, what you're actually saying is that almost all, it's not possible to say this number died in hospitals and this number died in police cells. It's not possible to break it down in that way, I'm asking. I will understand it will not be easy to give detailed information such as saying this person was in police custody for 5 days and not receiving treatment. I'm just saying that. Yes, this person died in hospital, but because he was not getting his diabetic treatment for 5 or 3 days until he became hyperglycemic and then was taken to hospital because he was now in a coma and they could not keep him. I'm just saying that it will be in the hospital, yes. However, because of the delay of treatment, which probably will not appear in any of the doctor's notes, I don't know. I'm just saying that whether it's possible to say this is the number that died in hospitals, but this is the number that died in police cells of natural causes. Because I don't know. Sometimes...
Many years ago to ICD. I mean, if you were to read this document, you don't have all the explanation. You just say, who? The police in South Africa killing people.
Of natural causes?
Yes. Whereas natural causes, they say you need a report that's going to indicate how many people and how they died in out of natural causes and how many people died in the police cell.
Yeah.
I think that's important. And as I'm saying, when I was here in the 90s, we asked the same report from the police, from ICD, and up to now, it looks like that's now probably more than 10 years ago. ICT has still not mastered this very simple thing or simple request.
Yes, Chair, I agree with you that must be categorized. Your 797 of natural causes and as a result of police action is very confusing. I don't have a problem with a person who is dying a natural death. See, I always go to the funerals to remind myself that is the way all of us must go. But when you kill a person, it's different. I get very, very sad. Now, if you could say this should be your homework, maybe natural causes out of 797 cases is this much, and as a result of police, it's this much. I will be happy to call a summit to say something must be done. Thanks.
I just want to maybe, in last year's annual report, we put that in, that breakdown. But there was a lot of criticism, you know, about the bulkiness and a lot of information. But Ms. Chabalala can maybe give us the breakdown.
I think what we're seeing, and it's talking as from people like on the ground. We go to police stations, and we always go into the cells. And there are occasions where we have seen someone, obviously in the final days of a terminal illness, dumped outside in the courtyard because the other prisoners will not have that person in the cell. So they've got TB, probably, or they're suspected of having TB. We've seen this, and there they are lying, basically unconscious, wrapped in blankets, out in the courtyard, and one imagines that next thing they will die right there. Now, yes, no one's physically beaten him over the head and killed him, but the police are as culpable, frankly, of killing that person as the next, because that person should have been in a hospital. And heaven knows, I can't remember how long he'd been lying there, but we certainly caused a fuss, and I think he was then taken off. But had we not been there, I believe he would have been left. So, you know, I do think, and I'm sorry, if somebody said to you that the report it was too bulky, tough luck. We actually need these figures, because you cannot have it all together and just say, oh, well, police action and natural causes. That's just ludicrous. It's got to be divided up in the annual report without question. And if someone says it's too bulky, we'll tell them that we want those figures. So you know, you can say, well, they died of natural causes, but actually the reality is they've been killed through neglect. In the same way that if they refuse their medication for a chronic illness, they die because of neglect. It's murder, plain and simple. It's not just a natural causes death. It's death by neglect. I don't know. There's got to be some terminology that covers it. So I just think that needs to be followed. Obviously, you can't put in your annual report the details of every single case. I mean, it would be like an Encyclopedia Britannica. But I would just like, I mean, we're probably sitting here and you're saying, what idiots, we do all of this and we do ask all of this, but I'd like to know if, in fact, you, when you're told by the police, yes, they just died, they just came here and they died, how deeply do you look into it? I'd like to know that. Thank you.
Can I make a correction? We never said last year you must remove any information. We didn't. What we said is that there were so many graphs that were repeated. You know, you talk about, what is this? People that are supposed to work in agriculture, they would be here. Nil. You go to another page, it will be agriculture. Or I'm just citing an example. Nil. You go to another chapter, it will be the same information repeated of things that are not relevant to ICD. And we actually complained about the quality of the report, which is not the case today. We're not complaining about the quality of your annual report. What we're talking about is to say it would assist us to have this information in the report. The report, which quality has improved drastically from what you gave us last year. We're complaining about the quality of the report. We referred to graphs that were, it was, in fact, your last year annual report was full of graphs. You'd go, it will be referring to a list of things, and you explained it to us that whoever gave you that, and therefore you were reporting on everything, even if it is something that is irrelevant to yourself. You'd repeatedly have it on this page, and you go to another page, it is there, and so on and so forth. So it was the quality of the report. However, here we're talking about that which we think it can assist us, which is relevant to ICD. That's what you're talking about, that this will assist us. Because it is very true, we're not talking about something that we've not seen. We were in a police station in Gauteng. Person, TB, on antiretrovirals, not receiving the treatment, antiretrovirals. The issue of resistance comes into picture. You actually are complicating a condition that is not supposed to be complicated. Then when this person is about to die, he's then sent to a hospital to die at a hospital. However, the reason this person is dying is because of the treatment that is not given as per the instructions of the doctor. I'm saying it will be very difficult to give us, for you to give us that information. However, I don't think it is not easy for you to say, of this number, so many died at the hospital, so many died Kuma cells. I think that is possible. Because even the letter that the doctors issue when the patient dies at the hospital, you're not going to get it if the person dies in cells. You know, it's another process that you follow. So it's very easy to separate between the two. I mean, the forms that are filled by doctors at the hospital are not the same as that where a person does not die in the presence of a doctor. You're not going to get that. So it's easy to get that information, and that is what we are asking for. Because it's actually are going to tell us as to how many people are neglected until they die, and they are said to have died in the natural causes. That's what we want, and that is all.
Chair, I do have a breakdown you know, on a supplementary information, as we indicated, ED indicated it wasn't included in the annual report. This basically gives you the breakdown of persons, you know, places where the death occurred. 53% of all the 797 deaths occurred at the crime scene. 29% thereof are persons who died in hospital. Okay, while 14% thereof died in police holding cells, and that includes one of the cases that you've just referred to, Chairperson. While 2% of these deaths occurred in SAPS vehicle, that is where the person, and one of them is in when a person was in transit, being transported to either a holding cell or was transported to court or hospital. So that is the breakdown. I mean, we've got also further breakdowns in terms of the ages of the victim. They also have breakdowns in terms of the gender of the victims. And also the persons, what we've also done is to look at the various ranks of the persons that are said to be complicit in terms of the death of the person. So that information is there. I mean, we can provide it. It's just that it was not certainly included, and I think that's something that we'll address going forward. Yeah, Chairperson.
In fact, I just want to find out, because if they are classified all those deaths as natural causes, under natural causes, natural death. So I just want to find out for a person to say is died on a natural cause, is it? Are you also investigating what actually caused that death? Because I think if it is the person died because he was neglected in the police cells, he was not taken to for medication at the hospital. So how do we classify that? Are we saying that those people are actually died of natural causes, or are we saying that those people were died because they were not given the relevant treatment? So I just want to know, because if we are saying it's just a natural death, if that person was actually not given medical attention, to me, I don't think that is a natural death, because that person could have been saved if he was given that help. So I just want to find out from the side of the ICDs, because I think that your mandate is actually to make sure that people who are actually dying under the hands of the police are actually what actually happened for those people to die. So just saying those people died because of natural causes, really it confuses me. I just need maybe clarity on that one. If you really investigate all the death,
if I were to come in there, I think it is doctors who declare the cause of death. It definitely would not be ICD. That will be too much to ask from them. Mm-hmm. So the doctor will say it's natural causes. And if the doctor says natural causes, you take it. Whether you're suspicious of that, unless you think there's something more to it and then you want to investigate a possible crime, otherwise, it's a doctor who will say that is the prerogative of doctors to actually state the cause of death, whether it's natural or unnatural. If it is natural, it's natural. If it is unnatural, then postmortem will follow to find the cause of death, and that will also be done by doctors. So it will always be the doctor who will state as to what the cause of death was, whether initially it was unnatural death. Then the doctors will conduct postmortem. And out of postmortem, they will then say in their notes the cause of death was a heart attack or something like that. But it is the responsibility of doctors to do that. I think that is fair. However, all that they will know is whether that person was at the hospital or in the police cells, that they can actually find out. If they suspect anything, then they can actually investigate that, but not the... That's what I'm saying. Yes,
Shabalaski. Okay, Chair, let me also indicate, and I think there was a question from Honorable Dana Kulabamat about whether we have the capacity to, for instance, investigate a person that we find dead in the cells, police holding cells. Our approach is when there's a report of death in police holding cells, and in some instances other places than even cells, would have to call the doctor, who would have to certify that the person indeed is dead, point number one. But also it is important from that point of view, from that particular scene where the person is found, to establish what could have been, you know, the cause of death at that time. Then to take it further at the post-mortem, because of we have to, in terms of our standard operating procedure, we're supposed to attend all of the post-mortems, you know, to be sure that indeed there is consistency in terms of what was found at the scene and what eventually becomes the finding that the doctor makes. In some cases, the doctors are not able to come to the crime scene, but I mean our investigators, because they've been to the crime scene, they are able to provide invaluable information to the doctors in terms of them performing the postmortem reports. And I think in some cases where we, for instance, have had doubts in terms of what a particular doctor, especially your general practitioners, have raised, would even call for a second opinion by a qualified pathologist to come and do an independent postmortem in that case. Then there are. Let me then go to further questions that were asked. Then there was a question regarding persons that died prior to arrest. Sorry, that were injured prior to arrest, and the question was, what is really the cause? There are various causes. It could have been that the person, in instances where there was a shootout, the person could have been shot, and by the time that this person, you know, is transported to hospital, they die in the process. So they will fall under that category. But also you'd have instances where there's vigilantism as well. Or a person has been arrested by the members of the community in the commission of an offense. And by the time that the police get there, this person has already been injured by members of the community. So that will be those category of persons. Then the question regarding, we've dealt with the issue of the cases carried over to the next financial year adequately. Does the ICD have expertise? Okay, this we've dealt with as well. The question around crime scene attendance. Yes, we again, that information, Chairperson, we did not include it in the annual report, but it certainly, I have it in terms of the supplementary information, and it's here. We can provide it. We have only attained about 61% in terms of attendance of crime scenes. There are still some challenges in respect of timeous reporting. And as you would understand, if we get the report after the scene has been cleared, then it becomes a biggest challenge, you know, for us in terms of our ability to conduct a thorough investigation from the crime scene. The scene has been cleared, there could have been tampering and so forth and so forth. But however, we endeavor, in terms of all those matters that are reported to us timeously, there is an improvement. But again, you know, going into the IPIT environment, Chairperson, we're hoping to see a huge improvement, because of there are serious obligations on the subs. In the event that they don't comply with these reporting obligations, there will be action that will be taken in respect of those station commissioners. I think what we've done is we've started them more than a year ago to engage the police and other stakeholders, you know, your Metropolis services, including even the Office of the Director of Public Prosecutions, in workshops where we take them. We've been taking them in terms of the new mandate, in terms of Section 28 of the IPIT Act, to say these are the reporting obligations. This is what is going to be expected of you. And, of course, over and above that, there will be protocols of understanding in terms of how then the reporting are supposed to be made and at what stage. So that, I mean, when we want to hold them accountable, they cannot be raising an issue of ignorance at that stage.
It's time. I don't know whether there's still another one who's going to respond to answers, because they might find that one person is taking the whole bulk home, because we have to close this meeting almost in 10 minutes' time.
My colleague indicates that she only has two questions to respond to. I have about three or four that are outstanding from my side that I can also deal with. Yes, the issue of the number of deaths, and I think the 797. Certainly, honourable members raised that as a concern that, you know, we still have this high number of deaths. You will see that in some cases we've seen a decrease in deaths in other provinces. For instance, just to give an example, the Western Cape, there's been a significant decrease. And I think issues of deaths, especially deaths which are caused as a result of police action, should also be looked at in relation to, you know, incidents where police are called, for instance, your heist and so forth. Now that you've seen also that a decline in those categories of crimes on the side of the police, you'd also realize that there has also been a decline in the number of deaths. So basically that has got a kind of a knock-on effect in terms of the decrease. But where you've seen an increase, and I think the Eastern Cape is one classic example, for instance, where that there has been a movement, for instance, where, you know, you would have seen heists, for instance, taking place in Gauteng. You also now see them going even in provinces which were traditionally, for instance, quiet in terms of those kind of offences. And the effect of that is that you would have, because the police have to respond to those, you then have a high number, starting to see a high number of deaths that are caused as a result of police shootings. So those are some of the challenges that we are encountering. The issue of the targets being low. You would recall three or so financial years ago, we were really battling with regard to attainment of strategic objectives. And it was the honorable members here that advised us that given the number of investigators that you have and resources at your disposal, the number of the targets that you have are unreasonably high. And it was on that basis that we approached the executive authority with the revised targets. And certainly once we, now that we're seeing that we obviously are improving in terms of the performance, certainly it will be time for us to look at perhaps a fraction of an increment over the years. But I think also I need to caution that we should not just look at issues of completion, because of this is not only the end, of the game in terms of investigation, because once you reach a stage of completion, it means then those matters that are substantiated are now taken at another level in terms of making recommendations to the Director of Public Prosecutions, in terms of taking these matters once the DPP has decided to prosecute, to take them to court. And as I've indicated during my presentation, honourable members, that we have 516 cases currently before court. Now, you'd understand that for these matters, when they appear before court, the investigators who are responsible for those cases would then have to be in court, would have to ensure that they subpoena all the witnesses and transport these witnesses to court. Otherwise, it then becomes the case is going to crumble in those cases. And during that period, it means this particular investigator is basically cannot be dealing with the workload that he or she is supposed to be at carrying at that particular point in time. So you have this this kind of knock-on effect as well that needs to be taken into consideration.
And there was a question. Do you have enough investigators to do the job?
Chairperson, I was asked by my colleagues to correct the information that I said yes. I was talking in relation to the issue of the backlog that I was giving. But certainly, I think we are on record, Chairperson, before this committee, that certainly we would require sufficient hands in order for us to deal with the cases. The final question, Chairperson, that I need to respond to was the question coming from Honourable Member Van Veek. That relates to our responses. Have we started now responding to the issue of crowd control? And I want to indicate that you'd recall, Honourable Members, that we came here to present our approach to crowd control. Subsequent to that, the ED then tasked our research unit to look specifically into two provinces, which is Mpumalanga and KwaZulu-Natal, where we have had a huge number of incidents of crowd management, to really identify what are the causes, and then from that we'll then be able to come up with interventions to say how then do we address the issues going forward. It has not been finalized, Honourable Member. We're looking at a month, 2 months? A month around that to be completed. Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson.
My question was not answered. What happens after the investigation is done and finished?
I just want to indicate, you would receive an allegation and an investigation then ensues. After that investigation, we'll then obviously evaluate whether the allegations, is there any evidence that supports the allegations? And if there is sufficient evidence that supports the allegation, we'll then generate a recommendation for steps to be taken, disciplinary steps to be taken against a particular member that is implicated. If it's a criminal matter that we're investigating, as well, we'll then generate a recommendation to the Director of Public Prosecution. So that is, in terms of what we found out. It will be the same in terms of that particular case that you're referring to with Fiera Dabra. If the recommendation, if that in that particular case, the recommendation was for criminal action to be taken against that particular member, then it means we have generated a recommendation. Unless there's a specific query that you wanted to raise. Honourable Member.
Chairperson, can I make a follow-up? Do you make follow-ups on the recommendations?
Thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. Yes, we do make a follow-up on the recommendations. And I guess history has taught us that the police were not taking us seriously in terms of our recommendations, and that is why the IPED Act, that so that we can be able to enforce the recommendations that we make. But currently what is happening is that with the recommendations that we have made currently, particularly in Gauteng, is that we are engaged on a monthly basis now to say that these are still the outstanding recommendations that we have done. What are you doing about them? So they are giving us feedback. We're engaging with the Office of the Provincial Commissioner to get feedback in respect of cases that are still outstanding. So that also, in respect of when we get also to IPED and there are recommendations on cases that we're no longer going to be dealing with, we're not sitting with a lot of outstanding matters when the matters are supposed to go to the Secretariat. But in respect of criminal matters, the DPP must take a decision, irrespective of whether we've made a recommendation to say that, according to us, there's a case. They still have, they are the dominus litis. In other words, they are responsible for litigation. So they will decide whether that person must go through the criminal courts or not. And so they don't have to enforce our recommendation. Thank you.
No, I agree fully with you. I don't think they're taking it seriously. I don't even believe that they've changed. I think it is IP that is going to bring some change. Because even in cases where they will say they've implemented your recommendations, it will be because they have sent the case to the disciplinary committee and the disciplinary court for the case that you said this person is guilty, they say is not guilty. And therefore they give you a report to say we've attended, we've implemented your recommendation and this person is working free, working, continuing to commit crime. And we discovered that when we were in Gauteng, because what we do when we visit police stations, we go through your annual report and we take out cases that you have identified for each police station. And that is why we're demanding more information from yourself, because it assists us when we go to police. And we say, according to ICD report, there was this death in custody in this police station, to tell us as to what happened to the cases. And then we discover that they're not doing anything. Yes, they're not taking steps, they're not disciplining people, they send them to disciplinary committees in provinces, and those people are found not guilty. We've asked Prokopin to give us the reasons for another case as to why a person was not found guilty for a case which we thought it was serious for any person not to be found guilty. And we've asked for the report from the chairperson of the disciplinary committee, and it's not forthcoming, that report. And we're going to summon the chairperson if he doesn't respond, because we want to know as to why they're not taking that work. And that is why we're demanding more information from yourself, because we try to reinforce that which you say in your report. However, we're not your, not working for you. Yes, ma'am.
Thanks, Chairperson. One of the questions that was asked, it was about the target which we did not meet on the registration and allocation of cases. I have indicated that we didn't meet this target because of the migration of cases from the previous database to the new case management. Chairperson, we had to shut down for a week the system, the old one, so that we can transfer all the cases. However, some provinces, they experienced problems. They couldn't use the system, hence they couldn't register and allocate those cases. The variance that is reflected is very, very minimum. If you look at the cases, it means that it was only 225 cases which were not registered. But it means the last month of the financial year, that is from the 1st of March to the 31st of March. However, we also had the manuals where we were registering the cases, and then we have to update the system accordingly. And then the second question, I think the ED has addressed that, where we were asked about the community awareness activities. If you recall, Chairperson, on our DVA report, we always detail the areas that we visited, the audience, and also the topic. By topic, what is it that we discussed with those audience? The only thing that we didn't include in our report is the number of people, it means in terms of the audience. But we do have the numbers, so that we didn't put it in the report. So the chairperson, if she still insists that she wants to know the number of the people that attend each and every event, we can provide that information at the later stage. Thanks, Chairperson.
I'll leave my question because the technicalities that the IPIT Act has not been implemented, so that's probably why they are running away from it. So I'll also leave it there. And probably when the secretary is here, we'll probably still find the same question.
Thanks, Chairperson. Another question, it was when I responded that question, I mentioned that the server crashed. So when we say there's a difference between the server that is down, a server can be down for a few hours and then it will be up and people will be able to use the database. But if the server is crashed, Chairperson, it takes time. It takes about 2 weeks to look at that and to make sure that the system is up and running. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Executive Director.
Can you just pass through you to the Executive Director? I mean, I don't want us to spend time on it, but we did ask the question, how far are you in terms of the implementation of the IPIT Act? What progress?
Executive Director, that question in your closing remarks. Also, what is the way forward for each program in your own view? Are the allocated funds adequate? What do you want to see happening for each program going forward? What will be happening starting from where we are going forward? And that will be part of your closing remarks. After that, I will close the meeting. It's up to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you for the comments. We will make sure that all the outstanding questions is made available to the committee secretariat as soon as you indicate what time it must be available, and we'll do that. Maybe in terms of the implementation, the Honourable Ms. Van Wyk asked about that. All the documents regarding the proclamation, all those documents have been submitted to the executive authority. We've suggested date with regard to that, but of course the executive authority must still make that decision. Then secondly, regarding the regulations in terms of the IPIT Act must still come to this committee for scrutiny, and we've also made it available to the executive authority, and as soon as we've got the
approval, that the executive authority is fine with that, we will also submit this to the committee to look at. Then in terms of the finances, in terms of IPET, we've did very comprehensive negotiations with Treasury. We've made our submission for the MTEC. Also going forward in terms of the ENE, it was signed off by the Minister. So that is where we are in terms of that. Then in terms of the programs going forward, Chairperson, of course, what Program 1, we in terms of the current Program 1 going forward, there will be a new leader for that program with the appointment of the new Chief Director. And we believe that this program will have to play a vital role to ensure that we have the necessary human resources capacity to ensure that we complement the IPED going forward and also the necessary skills. In terms of Program 2, of course, there will be, of course, the post will be advertised of the program head. There will be a process, and we believe that the new leader who will be appointed, they will also have to ensure that we then reach the strategic objective set out in Section 28. In terms of the current Program 3, that program will come to an end at the termination of ICD, and the new Program 3 will be legal services. We have finalized that process. That submission will also go to the Minister. We will also appoint a lady to head that, and we believe that program will have the necessary, well, we'll also make further appointments there to ensure that they've got the necessary skills to ensure that we reach the strategic objective set out for that program. So in terms of preparation, in terms of where we are, I think we're ready. In terms of the implementation, of course, the other important thing will be the appointment of the new provincial heads in the months leading up to the implementation of IPED. So that will be quite important to know, to ensure that we've got the necessary leadership in place in those provinces where we will have to, where we will be appointing a new provincial head. So that's going to be vital. So that is a status report, Chairperson, of where we are currently.
Thank you, Vish.
The executive director, a man must be told on this post that they must not be, I mean, I've never heard of, you're going to advertise a post, but already you know who you are going to employ.
Honorable, thank you very much for the response. Executive director, I come from Mpumalanga, I don't know the head of ICT in Mpumalanga. Not his face, not his name, not anything. So I don't know a person I'm talking about. However, all that I know is that he is or she is not performing. And this person has not been performing for quite some time now. And I think it cannot be that as a portfolio committee we allow a situation to continue like that. If this person has to remain in his position, then he must change or he must leave if he is a he. If she is a she must go home and look for other employment where she's going to perform. We can't allow a situation where every time we meet the ICT, we're talking about non-performance in a particular province to an extent that we have to send people to go and assist a person who is earning a salary for the work that he or she is to do. So I think we have got to say that. For responses that you said you're going to give us in writing, may we please get them by Friday this week? Time is quite short. However, we've got to compile this report and adopt it, so we can't give you more than that. On the issue related to leases, we definitely will request you to give us a detailed written response. However, we might have to call you to discuss this matter related to leases, not just one lease, but any other lease that you have to come and discuss this, because we think this amount that you spent for the previous financial year is too huge. It's a growth that was not anticipated by ourselves from 4 to 15. That's a lot of money. So we actually might invite the department to come and explain this to the portfolio committee. Let me say that the report that was, the annual report that you tabled before Parliament this year is professionally prepared. If you read it, you get some sense as to what is happening in ICD. You can improve, because improvement is for all of us any time given. However, this report, I can't even say you can compare it to the report that you tabled before Parliament last year. It's not comparable. It's an annual report that a person can read and criticize, but it's a professionally prepared annual report, and that we are appreciating. And the fact that it was tabled on time, the fact that we have the stretch plan tabled on time, we have your annual performance plan tabled on time, definitely as the portfolio committee are appreciating that. So that when we prepare for the meetings and we want to hold you accountable, we're able to use these documents. They are in front of us. If we do not use them, we can't blame ICD. It will be because we did not find time to read the documents on our own. Otherwise, the documents are there. We did check with Treasury as to whether particularly annual performance plan, your strategic plan, is indeed meeting the guidelines, the Treasury guidelines. And indeed, they said yes. And that we are appreciating. I think that is showing some positive achievements on the side of ICD. I was really listening to you as you are responding to our questions. I think, unlike in the past, you came here with some confidence. Because you have met all our requirements and demands in terms of submitting your reports on time, your strike plans, your annual performance plan, your document which you're going to present here today, that gives you some confidence. And I think there is some improvement in the manner in which you're doing your work as ICD. You have got to do more. The work that you are doing demands of you to do more. You're dealing with police, not politicians. Probably sometimes politicians are seen as very tricky and difficult people, but I think police are more difficult than politicians. And unless you know your story, you'll run around and run in circles, and you'll never be able to do your work. And I think somehow you've got to have that authority that you need in order to perform your duties. Like we've indicated, when we visit police stations, we use your reports, and we say we're going to police station so and so. What did ICD say? And if there were deaths in custody, we take them and names of those people, or whatever, that there was this death in custody during this financial year that was reported by ICD. Tell us, what did you do about this? There was this case of misconduct that was in the ICD report. Tell us, what did you do? So we're doing it, and we're reporting in our reports on these cases. And that is why we're demanding some work from yourselves. These meetings are not meant for you to come, sit, present, ask questions, and then we close the meeting, you go back to do the one and the same thing. They're meant for holding you accountable. The money that you are using is not your money, it's the taxpayer's money. And we have every right to know as to how each cent is spent. Nobody in South Africa is not paying tax. Whether a person is going to buy an orange out there or bread out there, they are paying VAT. So all of us, poor, rich, or whatever, we are taxpayers. And we have every right to ask you these questions. And where we think you are not doing well, we will never be afraid to tell you. It doesn't matter as to how you feel after that, because this is our money. We are paying this money, including yourself. And we are seated here as members of Parliament asking these questions on behalf of the 50 million people out there who do not have this opportunity to come and ask as to how you are making use of their money. And if the people out there are complaining that this is what is SAPS doing to all of us, and when we look for ICD, ICD is nowhere to be found, we have every reason to come and tell you on behalf of those people that you are not seen, you are not known, you're not doing your work. And we will say that without any fear, without any favor, whether after the meeting you say bye-bye Chairperson or you don't say bye-bye Chairperson, but we'll continue to say it because this is what we are paid for as members of Parliament. I say it, we do not volunteer. We are paid for being members of Parliament. Whether I will want to get more pay, however, the salary that I'm still getting for now is because I have asked you questions and I've held you accountable. And I have said, what is this listing now? Why this sudden growth and escalation? What has happened? What did you think when you decided to go to an accommodation that will actually cause this cost escalation? I have every mandate from the people of this country to ask these questions. And that is why on this one, we definitely are going to invite you. We have 2 full weeks for that met for committee work. And probably during that time, we might invite you to come and explain just this one. Because we're not going to leave things and say, wow, shame, you know. No, whether you are my comrade or not my comrade, when it comes to my work, it's my work. Then we'll meet in the ANC meeting or in the DA meeting, but here we are members of Parliament and the relationship starts and it ends there until we meet also outside the meeting. But thank you very much for the presentation. Thank you for the work that you're doing. You can do more and the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.